Okay, guys, I've got an awesome recommendation for you. I've been looking for a smart, wearable piece of tech that I can use for fitness and health tracking and all that everyday use, but also something that's really great when I'm outdoors, having fun, going on adventures. And I have found it. It's called Amazfit. You might not have heard of them. I actually hadn't, but 42 million users have, so it's really well established. They make a ton of different smartwatches and bands and other stuff. But the watch I've been testing out is part of their adventure series, and it's called the Amazfit T-Rex 3. And I'm going to get into the tech stuff in a minute, but I just want to say it looks so cool. Even my missus has said to me, "That's a cool looking watch," and she knows what she's talking about, and I don't get those kind of compliments every day. But onto the nitty gritty stuff, when it comes to outdoor sports and adventure, it's got it all. It can track hiking, skiing, biking, running. It's got free diving. That's how much it covers, 170 sport modes and all. It's got all the usual health stuff, but check this out. The battery life is ridiculous. I've been wearing it nonstop for 10 days and haven't had to recharge it once. So it's perfect for adventure stuff, for traveling. I absolutely love it. Highly recommend it. So if you want to find out more, go to amazfit.com/armchair. And that's one word, A-M-A-Z-F-I-T. And when you get there, you're going to get 15% off your order. That's massive. So that website again is amazfit.com/armchair. The Amazfit T-Rex 3 is more than just a smartwatch. It's your personal guide to exploration, discovery, and the thrill of the unknown.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front payment equivalent to $15 per month. New customers on first 3 month plan only. Taxes and fees extra. Speeds lower above 40 gigabytes in detail.
Welcome to Elements of Alula, Earth, Air, Water, and Fire. In this series, we're going to take you on a journey into the heart of one of the most ancient kingdoms on Earth. Located in the northwestern corner of Saudi Arabia, Alula is an oasis in the desert layered in 200,000 years of human history. Each episode will explore a single element, the community of water, the adventure of air. And today, we'll begin with the heritage of Earth, revealing a place still largely undiscovered by the outside world. These are the elements of Alula. So we have just arrived at the Harat viewpoint. It's sunset. The colors are just going back in these pastel colors of the desert of orange and red and yellow and green as well. The oasis here is absolutely striking, isn't it?
It is, actually, yes. And from up here, we can literally see the vastness of the oasis and all the 2.3 million palm trees that are...
Wait, like a 2.3 million palm trees.
Yes, and it looks like a sea of green from up here, right?
It does. It looks like a river. I'm here with Laura Alho. She's going to be our guide on this trip. Originally from Finland, Laura has been living in and writing about Saudi Arabia for more than 15 years.
Imagine these travelers coming here like thousands of years ago. This would be like on the ancient trade route, the Hajj route. They would stop in Alula. They would have come here from the north. They would stay in the oasis for maybe weeks. They would leave their belongings here sometimes. And then they'd make their way to Mecca, Medina, come back here, stay again, and then make their way back up north.
How good would that have felt? Like you're traveling through the desert for weeks, maybe months, and then all of a sudden on the horizon, you see this sea of green and you know there's this fertile, lush land and you can have a rest and drink some water, eat some dates.
Yes, it would have been such a really like a retreat, like a lush sort of like, wow, is this even real? Maybe they, you know, they were tired from the desert journey.
This and is the first like, wellness retreat of...
Yes, exactly, the ancient wellness retreat.
The oasis snakes 12 miles through a wide canyon of ochre and fire red. Surrounding it on all sides is the infinite horizon of the desert. Towering cliffs and monumental rocks lit up in the golden sun as far as the eye can see.
It starts where we're standing now. It starts 200,000 years ago. And this Harrat, which means the lava field, they were present up here. And then let's say around 10,000, 9,000 years ago, we find these mustatils, we find these tombs also up here on the Harrat. So that's where these first settled civilizations begin to appear. The climate changed, and then the civilizations moved down to the valley. So when they were down there, the first major kingdom is the Dedan kingdom, the Dedan Alehian kingdom. They settled here in the most sort of strategic and lush area of the oasis. And that was around 3,000 years ago. And then after that came the Nabataeans. The Nabataeans settled a little bit more north. And then after Nabataeans, we had Romans here for some while. Then after that, let's say in the 13th century, they moved to the Old Town. So right below us where we're standing now, we can see the Old Town where they then moved up until the 80s. Mm. So this is such an amazing, actually, vantage point because you can literally see the timeline of Alula from this point.
200,000 years of history is almost unfathomable, isn't it, to try and understand, but you can somehow feel the resonance of that presence and all those different civilizations building on top of each other. But that story isn't finished, you know?
We keep finding things. So just like literally a couple of weeks ago, they found the world's largest stone axe.
Wow.
Yes, just over there in Al Khurh.
Like,
it's 51.3 centimeters long.
Okay.
That would have been like from the Neolithic period.
My gosh.
Yeah. And how much more is still under these layers that we see?
Yeah, it's fascinating to think about. It's you go to so many places and there's archaeological history, but this isn't a museum. This is a living, breathing archaeological site and discoveries still being made. Maybe we'll find something.
Yes, who knows?
Who knows? All right, let's start digging.
Yeah, let's do it.
And we're going to start on the other side of the oasis with the first of Alula's ancient kingdoms.
Dadanit, they were famous for controlling the ancient trading routes, like this incense specifically, and Dadan was like a main stopping point for traders.
Our guide is referring to the incense road, a network of trade that connected the aromas of Arabia, especially frankincense, all the way to the Mediterranean. And the ancient city of Dadan, where we are now, was a vital stopping point along that route, providing food, water, and sanctuary for merchants who would have traveled hundreds of miles across the desert to get here. The main residential areas of the city are still being uncovered. This is an active dig site. But what they have found are their tombs.
We call them here Alula lion tombs because there are two, as you will see, two lions guarding the tombs. But these two lions, by the way, it's a feature for the Ma'inian. The Ma'inian, by the way, they are a tribe, came from the south. There is a city called Ma'in, and they prefer to live here in Dadan because, you know, they're merchants and they prefer to live in the main hub stopping point for traders. And the Ma'inian people, they are the ones that use the lions, not the Dadanites.
Okay.
Even the inscription we will see up there, it says it's for the Ma'inian merchant and he gave offerings for the god Asi to protect his tomb as long as the sky and the earth still exist.
The lions represent strength and protection, but they also represent the diversity and acceptance of Dadan. This was a place where all were welcome. Because the incense road carried with it more than just goods to trade. It carried art, culture, and ideas.
So we're walking across a rocky plain here up to obviously enormous cliff face and cut into the base of the cliff face, very like, geometrically perfect actually, are these rectangular holes, like man-made caves. And there's some steps leading up to them. And I feel very lucky because they're just building this new path. I'm testing it out for the first time. And now for the first time, tourists can actually come up and see these tombs up close too. So let's go take a look. wow, as you get higher up, you really get perspective on the oasis here that we're next to. And it ends so abruptly too. You're just seeing a narrow band through the canyon that is absolutely lush and fertile and bursting with life. But beyond that, there's nothing. There's just barren rock. Right, let's go up a bit higher and see what we can find. I think I just saw my first lion carving up there. Is that right?
Yeah.
Guarding the tombs.
I love coming up here because of the view. And you can really imagine how the people who came up all the way here to make the tombs, this would have been a very special placement, actually, because we're going to the highest point. So these are the most important kind of places for them to bury the I'm sorry, I'm running out of my breath.
Bury their dead. Yeah.
See.
Not a bad final resting place. Oh, I need some water after that. This is so cool. We've made it to the top now, and we're actually standing in front of one of the tombs with the two lions guarding each side.
And look at the details of the carving of the actual lion. Like, they actually carved out the hair of the male lion.
Yeah, the mane of the kind of, yeah.
So yeah, that's what I meant, yeah. And the claws, like the sharp claws and the teeth.
It needs sharp claws and teeth, right? It's guarding. It needs to be a little scary.
Yes, exactly.
This isn't a lion you want to pet. This is the one you want to protect.
Do not rob this tomb.
Yeah.
Yesterday, the archaeologists have their tools up there. They found an inscription that it says that there's a king buried here, but they didn't find any tomb. Hmm. But still they found artifacts, many new findings, but no human remains whatsoever.
So there's still kings to be found here in this cliff.
There are, I think, around 16 kings in Dadan. They used to be closed with the blocks of stones.
Yeah, makes sense. But right now they're open, of course, and I'm looking in. And what's so amazing is I can actually lean into the tomb itself. And as I look back to the back wall there and the ceiling, you can see the chisel marks that were made 3,000 years ago. And it's so cool to be somewhere this close to these archaeological discoveries.
After the tombs, we head to the residential area of the city. Nothing's on display here, not yet. Most of it is still hidden underground. But there are hints of what's to come. Laura points out dozens more tombs cut into the sheer cliffs like honeycomb, and a stone stairway hewn from rock walls leading precariously to the summit of a plateau. Perhaps to a place of worship, or maybe a hidden king's tomb. We don't know, not yet. But there are places where the clues are easier to read, because Wal Dadan's tombs shows us how they honored their dead. On the other side of the oasis is a place that shows us how they lived.
We call this actually the open library. So this is a canyon nestled in these beautiful sandstone cliffs, completely full of inscriptions.
Yeah.
And they're from the Dadan and Lehyang kingdom, the one we just visited. So this is where they would come to offer their prayers.
We're in a place called Jabal Ikma, or Ikma Mountain, just a few miles north of Alula. And I am surrounded on all sides by inscriptions carved into stone.
So this is where the water gushes down when it rains. So you'll see waterfalls, there's streams. The presence of water in this canyon is very significant. Mm. And that's probably why they chose this site. It's so special. In the mornings, here the birds, the sound is echoing. It's like this natural acoustic place where people would, like, as you can see, it's everywhere we look. The inscriptions are everywhere.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
I'm looking at this rock in front of us right now. Literally embossed into the stone is this ancient lettering, you know, carved about 3,000 years ago or more. A lot of times you'll see animals depicted, and you know, I look over here and I can see some camels, maybe what looks like a bull even. I have to say, whoever drew this ibex over here was like the Picasso of the day, isn't it? Like, this is so detailed and beautiful. We can see the musculature of its body, and the horns are beautifully carved. But to call it a library is what really is very moving to me, actually, because I've never heard of prayers written into the stone. Of course, we speak them out loud, but when you speak them into the air, they kind of disappear with the wind. But here, they remain. They're still here now, and there's something about that which feels more powerful almost.
Jebel Ikma represents the largest concentration of Dadanite inscriptions in the world. Every rock face of this shaded corner of the canyon is covered.
The archaeologists have translated every single one of the prayers here, and it took them quite some while because there's hundreds of them. Yeah. There's five different languages that appear in the open library from 400 BCE until the 9th century. Mm-hmm. Hundreds of years they would have been coming here. So we know a lot of information actually from these inscriptions about the history of this kingdom, as well as we know what was important to them, because of course when you're doing your prayers, this is what is the most important thing for you to ask from the gods, right? Mm. A lot of these prayers are asking for blessings for their crops, mentioning also priests and priestesses who were here and helping them. Whatever they were doing in the ceremony, we don't know, but very much involved in the ceremonies and even as priestesses.
For me, this is kind of what it's all about, because right here you see, actually as I'm talking, I'm looking up on the other side of the canyon and there's tons of inscriptions I'm seeing up there now. And it started with a single book, but this library of this canyon is absolutely filled now. But it really kind of brings it all home about what this represents, because here, when I look at these inscriptions, the earth, the spirit, the life, the culture, the history, all comes together in one beautiful depiction, and that depiction will last for another 3,000 years.
Yeah, it's amazing actually, and I like how you're thinking about it, like it's really all inscribed in that one stone there.
Yeah.
The idea and the feeling that those people had, they were like us, right? I mean, they had the same hopes, their family was important to them.
Yeah.
And we can see that from this place.
It's true, it's easy to look to the distant past and feel disconnected, so separate from that, because our life has changed so much. But actually what's really changed is our technologies, our culture, but who we are inside really hasn't changed that much. And when you look at this, you can feel that too. They're praying for their families and their crops. They're praying for a good life like we all do.
Yeah, okay. Exactly, yeah.
That's wonderful. Yeah, yeah. Thanks for taking me here.
Yeah, my pleasure. It's one of my favorite places in Allah.
Hey guys, I want to talk to you about slow fashion. Now, you probably know about slow travel, which is about savoring a place and choosing trips that benefit local communities. Slow fashion, I actually hadn't heard of before until I started chatting with the guys from Doer, who are very generously sponsoring this episode. Thank you guys, you're awesome. And the reason why I'm so excited to be working with them is because Doer make clothes that fit both sides of my lifestyle. At work, I want to wear something that my missus says, dang, you look good in. At play, I want to wear something that's designed for active outdoor fun, that's stretchy and built for that kind of thing. And they do that. Doer is built for doing, and they fix that problem by doing both sides of my life. But they also, and this is where slow fashion comes in, they solve another issue for me, which is sustainability. Doer uses 85% plant-based fibers, which is amazing for the environment. Fast fashion counts for something like 20% of all microplastics in the ocean. So choosing slow fashion, choosing a company like Doer, really does make a difference. So they have got you covered all year round, and they've also got you covered for winter. I know you guys are thinking about that. That's coming up. They got lots of special brands, fireside denim, all-weather denim, lots of stuff designed for outdoor fun in this season. I absolutely love my Doers, and I really do think you will too. So check out Doer's flagship stores in LA or Denver, or go online at shopdoer, that's doer.com/explore. Right now, guys, you're going to get 20% off your first order. That's massive. That is a great deal. So go to shopdoer.com/explore to get that deal, to go and check it out. You're going to love it. So don't wait to get that 20% off. Go now to shopdoer.com/explore. Okay, guys, I've got an awesome recommendation for you. I've been looking for a smart wearable piece of tech that I can use for fitness and health tracking and all that everyday use, but also something that's really great when I'm outdoors, having fun, going on adventures, And I have found it. It's called Amazfit. You might not have heard of them. I actually hadn't, but 42 million users have, so it's really well established. They make a ton of different smartwatches and bands and other stuff, but the watch I've been testing out is part of their adventure series, and it's called the Amazfit T-Rex 3. And I'm going to get into the tech stuff in a minute, but I just want to say it looks so cool. Even my missus has said to me, that's a cool looking watch, and she knows what she's talking about, and I don't get those kind of compliments every day. But onto the nitty-gritty stuff, when it comes to outdoor sports and adventure, it's got it all. It can track hiking, skiing, biking, running. It's got free diving. That's how much it covers, 170 sport modes and all. It's got all the usual health stuff, but check this out. The battery life is ridiculous. I've been wearing it nonstop for 10 days and haven't had to recharge it once. So it's perfect for adventure stuff, for traveling. I absolutely love it. Highly recommend it. So if you want to find out more, go to amazfit.com/armchair. And that's one word, A-M-A-Z-F-I-T. And when you get there, you're going to get 15% off your order. That's massive. So that website again is amazfit.com/armchair. The Amazfit T-Rex 3 is more than just a smartwatch. It's your personal guide to exploration, discovery, and the thrill of the unknown. Archaeologists have referred to Alola as the New York or London of its day. And that cosmopolitan history has been immortalized in the earth itself. Because the people that came to Jabal Ikma prayed to different gods, they spoke different languages, and they were all welcomed here at this confluence of cultures along the Incense Road. Without those merchants daring to cross the desert, Alola wouldn't exist as we know it today. But they couldn't have done it alone.
This is so cool. This is, we're just arrived in the Ashdod Valley, and there is a line of riders. Look at the sunshine hitting them, the last rays of sun. Oh, we're getting our horse over. What if this is my guy?
Hassoun.
Hassoun?
Hassoun.
Hey, we can have fun together, Hassoun? Yeah.
Horses were the pride of the desert, but they weren't its beating heart. Before the domestication of the camel, there was no incense road. Crossing the desert laden with goods was an impossible task. Camels changed all of that. Merchants would travel in caravans of thousands, sometimes for months at a time. And we're here to experience a snapshot of what that would have been like and meet some camels along the way. But we're not riding them. Laura's got something much faster in mind.
Hey, where are you going? Let's go. Come on. Let's go this way. Yes. So I'm looking down the Ashdod Valley right now. The wind's whipped up the sand of the desert, and I'm just looking through a golden mist of sand at the canyons and the mountains beyond.
Oh, he wants you to hold it closer.
Hassan's a bit of a runner, is he? He's a bit of a bolter. Uh-oh.
I think they all are because they're Arabians.
No, it's Arabian horses, yeah. Right? They like to run.
Arabian horses are amongst the oldest and purest breeds in the world, known for their stamina and speed. And as I'm about to find out, they are born to run.
When you are not afraid,
yeah,
you feel freedom, you know.
That explains it well.
Yes. Now also move that way.
Yep, towards the setting sun. It's almost surreal. You've seen this in movies hundreds of times. It's Lawrence of Arabia, it's the desert, it's the golden sun setting on the back of an Arabian horse. It just doesn't get much better than that. You can feel the power of this horse. It's stronger than any horse I've ridden before. He is just pulling at me. He's desperate to run. Woo! That wind is really kicking up now. I feel like we're in a bit of a sandstorm. We got this, though, Hussein.
The wind whips a soft mist on the horizon, shading the distant mountains in a golden veil. As we ride deeper into the valley, we find petroglyphs of lions, proof, like Dedan's tombs, that they once roamed these lands. He Here, it's easy to glimpse the fierce emptiness of this land, but also its pull, for there is perhaps no more beautiful light in the world than the desert at sunset. Not that Hussein cares. As we turn to head home, he catches the scent, digs his hooves in, and does what he was born to do.
I definitely feel like a little kid who has borrowed, quote unquote, his dad's Ferrari before he can drive and suddenly realized that he's bitten off more than he can chew. But it's too late and he's got to drive it home. And we've still got to get home, Hussein. So I'm just going to hold on here. My friend here is going to look after me.
That's Abdullah, another of the guides. He's come over and tied our horses together. Turns out, the kid in the Ferrari is getting towed home.
Okay, put the safety net on. Yeah. Fair enough. Thank you for your help. Oh. I'm getting crushed next to my friend here. Oh, this is so funny. We're just like banging feet the whole time. I am completely out of control. Oh, I need to get my feet in the stirrups here. There we go. Oh, I'm running now. Try not to scream. Woo! Oh my god. That is amazing. Alright. Yeah. Quite enough horsey adventure for one day for this. Look at this travel writer right here. Well, thanks to my friend here, I'm still alive. I've been on horses before, but not an Arabian horse. So thank you, my friend. You saved my life. Shukran.
I love you.
Needless to say, we walked the rest of the way. But we weren't quite finished yet.
This is the daddy camel. They can be extremely aggressive. So we don't want to look at these guys. It's too big. Humongous. Okay, so these are the girls. Look at the beautiful...
Look at her posing and like pouting. She's putting her camel pouting lips out at us there.
She's like smiling. That's a sign of beauty.
Is it?
Yes, and the hump on the nose is a sign of beauty as well.
Oh, I can tell.
And
that is a beautiful...
very long eyelashes. Oh. Not extensions. No,
they're real?
They're real.
They're real.
Yeah.
Wow. And the little bit of camel mascara. Hello, darling. Yeah. You all right? Hello.
Want to go closer or give a kiss?
Those lips look too big for me to handle. I gotta be honest with you.
There are more than 100 words in Arabic for camel, each one describing a particular trait from color and build to whether they're difficult to catch or first to the watering hole. The idea that they store water in their humps is a common misconception. They actually keep fat there. Water is stored in their bloodstream, which is why they were essential for those merchant caravans.
And such camels are perfectly adapted to the desert when you think about it, like in so many ways. Like even the eyelashes, they have actually a function because of the sandstorms. Yep. So they actually keep the eye closed and they seal it from the sand. And they're able to eat pretty much anything. So the way that their mouths are like, they can eat the thorns and the bushes without making sores in their mouth.
Amazing animals.
Oh, look. Oh, this one?
Yeah.
Okay. He says that this one remembers. Camels remember really well.
So do they?
He's saying that it remembers me.
They remember.
It is thought a camel's memory is among the best in the animal kingdom, helping them navigate between water sources. This skill for the Bedouin was invaluable, as was their milk, which they believed would enhance their own memory too.
See, they're eating flowers. So when the mothers eat this one also, the milk tastes like a... really good.
Huh.
So I tasted the milk here, this one, this camel milk here. It tastes sweet.
Really?
Yeah.
Sweet from the flowers.
Yes, very good. Do you want to go there and feed them some flowers?
You mean actually go in there?
Yeah.
All right, let's go in and do it.
Go inside.
Okay, we're going to go inside and feed some baby camels.
I'm going to get eaten. I need to record it.
Look at this. Oh, this is the brave one.
Oh. Yeah, this is, we're going to give you some food.
Camel poop.
Oh, it's come to you, Laura. How about some of mine?
Mine is better. This is my favorite, this one. Okay.
You know what? Don't tell my horse, but I love you way more than my horse.
Good.
There you go. Oh, I just fed the camel.
Oh, no chop. She's trying to chop on my microphone over here. No.
This is our producer, Jason.
So fluffy. I see what you're doing. No nibbling.
Jason, you're in love, I think.
Good
for
job.
Just a baby, an 8 foot tall baby.
What
are you doing?
Jason's a camel whisperer.
That's what he's doing. Like a natural.
Just a natural.
Natural, yeah.
Which You're one so is a boy?
Your mic. Your mic, Jason. Jason.
Hey.
Fair enough.
Will the mic withstand the camel attack?
We'll find out.
Adapted to the desert and apparently podcasting too. And just like Jason's microphones, the Dadanai kingdom did not last forever. Around the first century BC, the Nabataeans arrived, and they too left their mark carved into the earth, but on a completely different scale.
We're going to go and explore some ancient civilization of the Nabataean people that were here 2,000 years ago, actually. They built a city here. They settled here. It was a tribe, the Nabataeans. They came out from north in current Jordan. So this is their second biggest city after Petra.
Yeah, it's interesting. Petra is famous all over the world, and I feel like this is like the undiscovered Petra, isn't it? And of course, it's the first UNESCO World Heritage Site in Saudi Arabia, too.
Oh,
bumping around a little bit.
A little bouncy.
The Nabataeans rose to prominence like the Dadanites before them through their strategic control of the caravan routes. First in Jordan, where the kingdom began, and then eventually here in the Alula Valley as it expanded. Petra was their principal city in the north, and it's renowned today as one of the most striking ancient landmarks in the world, visited by a million people every year. Here in Hegra, the Nabataeans left their mark in the exact same way.
So we have different outcrops of tombs, like clusters of tombs in them. Now we're passing by the Red Mountain, also known as the Jebel Ahmar, and the twin tombs over here. In the back of the tomb, there's an area where their city was actually built. So it's in the center of the site. That's where they lived. The residential areas are located there. And the tombs are all built around it in a circular manner. And that mountain range over there, those stone pillars, strange looking. Some of them look like even like human figures. That is the Jebel Ithlib, which means the holy mountain of the Nabataean people. And we can see the hot air balloons actually hovering over there above Jebel Ithlib. So somebody was up even earlier than us.
Not bad. All right, let's get out and check out our first tomb.
The ancient city of Hegra is vast. 111 tombs have been catalogued so far, but many more lie in wait. And though the style is consistent with Petra, the feel is completely different. Petra is hemmed in down a narrow canyon. Hegra is open. Each of the monumental tombs here has been carved into isolated rock outcrops, huge sandstone boulders the size of mansions spread out between wide patches of empty sand. And we have someone special to show us around.
This is our storyteller.
Nice to meet you.
I'm the Bluey with you.
In the heritage sites, we don't have tour guides. We have Rawis, which are the storytellers.
Storytelling, actually, it was from when we were young. We used to sit with the elders and they tell us stories. So it's something in the culture. It's not something that's new for us.
I can imagine travelers coming in and seeing this and sitting down by the fire at night and sharing stories.
Yeah, in the caravans, yeah. from thousands of years people come to this place. It's not something new for Al-Ula. And all these civilizations who passed this area, they always welcoming who's coming to them. It's wonderful telling the stories. And since 5 years, every day I work in this job, it feels like my first day.
A decade ago, being a Rawi might not have been considered a suitable job for a young man like Muhammad. But as the country has been opening up to tourism, young people like him are taking up the posts with pride, sharing their story of their country.
I just feel really relaxed being out here. Soaking up the early sun rays, surrounded by these beautiful rocks.
It's just us, to be able to experience this kind of the peacefulness of the desert.
And there's no people here. It's just us coming up to our first tomb.
So every time I see this facade, I have the same. And this facade actually belonged to a civilization that is here 2,000 years ago. So there is a Nabatean people who were in Petra in Jordan. They settled there 312 BCE. And they took control of the trade route and become a trader. And they wanted to expand their kingdom. And for that, they head to one of the greatest places that provide water, food, and it's on the trade route, which is Hegra, where we are standing now. They constructed a full city with a wall and watchtowers around it, and they carved this beautiful facade which we are seeing here. And this exactly we call it Al Farid, which means the unique and the isolated.
Kasir Al Farid is also often translated as the lonely castle, and that is exactly what it looks like. Most tombs in Hegra are cut together. A single boulder may hold a dozen. Kasir Al Farid stands alone. At four stories high, it towers above Hegra. At the top, two stairways hewn from the rock lead upwards to the sky. Pillars and molded railings adorn the facade, and a small entranceway at the base, with an eagle at its head, leads to the hollow tomb within. And all of it is so perfectly in harmony with the environment. It's as if the stone itself has morphed organically into shape.
What makes Crystal Geyser Alpine Spring Water different? We always bottle our Alpine Spring Water less than 1.5 miles from the spring source. And we're also committed to sustainability. That means all our bottles are made with 50% recycled plastic from two of our very own recycling plants. So when you want the best water nature has to offer, the choice is crystal clear. Crystal Geyser Alpine Spring Water, bottled at the spring source. Learn more at crystalgeyserplease.com.
So the story behind this, it's also unique. To own one of these, it's take a process which is require time, money, and effort to do that, which they reserve the rock, then hire stone cutter to cut it from top to bottom. They start with the stairs. It's something believe they take the souls to heaven. And below the stairs directly, there is a decoration that's inspired from Egyptian. And below the Egyptian one, there is another one which is inspired from Roman. This come from trade route, because trade route wasn't only transporting a product, it was transporting culture.
It's incredible to look at it and think that people carve this out of this huge rock. It's like a monolithic rock coming out of the desert, just standing on its own here. And people saw this huge rock and had the imagination and creativity and the grit to go in there and carve this incredible facade from it.
The way they do it in phases, actually. They don't carve it at once. They finish the stairs, then they finish the ledges, then they finish what's below it. The eagle, even the eagle and the its wing, and the shape of it, actually, it's incredible. I mean, I can imagine how sculptors learn these with like thousands of hours to obtain the skills to make what's considered today one of the art pieces here in the world, not only here in Ireland.
That really represents what this whole area is all about, isn't it? It's all about cultures coming together, fusing ideas, and this is the perfect expression of it. Well, thank you. It's going to be hard to beat this one.
For me, this is not my favorite.
No? All right, let's go see your favorite then.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the most remarkable things about Hegra is how well preserved it is. Each site was meticulously chosen, not just for its grandness, but also for its protection from the elements. Looking at it today, it's as if the carvers just put down their chisels. In other sites, which are busier and more formally presented, that's somehow expected. Here, alone in the desert, it's astonishing.
So this called Jebel Benat. The reason for calling it that, because there is four of them belong to women. The important one of them, it's one for Kam, daughter of Wa'ilah. Naturally, always people revere their names after their fathers. So Muhammad, Ibrahim. But this too, Kam Kama revere her name by her mother. And she bought it herself, and she just didn't mention her father on that description.
Powerful. First feminist, yeah. What does that signify to you? How is that even possible in that day and age?
Nabatean people respected women very well. They even got ruled by a woman, Shuqayla. There's no things documented, that's why she wrote her mother name instead of father, but we can think about reasons. Maybe she is not proud of her father, for example, or maybe more proud of her mother than father, or her mother raised her by herself. So it's many reasons that a human can think about. After all, even before 2000 years, we're still human. We still have the same thing, we still have the same circumstances and the way of thinking around things. If you love person, the same feeling 2000 years ago it will appear nowadays. Same species, same thing, same mind.
Our final tomb is smaller and more humble. There isn't the intricacy or grandeur of some of the larger ones. But it is, in the entire site, the most unique.
Wow. There are 111 tombs here in Hegra, but only one that you can go inside, and I'm inside it right now. It's a room filled with shelves where I believe the bodies would have been placed, lots of them, and I can see the chisel marks still. There's something about the permanence of carving something like this in the earth, and there's already that sense of magnitude. And 2,000 years later, we can still come here and appreciate them. This is so cool to be in here.
Alula is a living museum. History rises from the earth. The earth holds the stories of the people who lived here, from hand axes 200,000 years old and tombs carved where lions once roamed, to wonders of the world and prayers etched in stone. And because of that, those stories remain. Standing inside the tomb, seeing those chisel marks makes it come alive. I could hear the history and the resonance of the walls. I could feel it in the sand. I could taste it in the dust of the arid air.
Every time I do a tour, I feel like I jumped in the time machine in like 2,000 years ago. I imagine what a human can do in this area. Imagine myself here with a ton of Nabatean who's doing their daily life. Imagine a city and there is a caravans like far from here passing by and they noticed there is a city they can spot in the horizon and may provide with water, provided with food and maybe buy and sell and get rid of the products they have and sell it to them and earn money in exchange because they have money here. So they go to the city and everyone Nabatean saw the caravans, things that they never seen before, spices, myrrh, frankincense, and they will connect with different culture entirely. Once the human connect, everything will open for each other. But they need to connect first.
Yeah, it's incredible to get that picture of watching the caravans arrive on the horizon. And you don't know what they're going to hold. You don't know what mysteries. You can just imagine the kids running around and saying their caravans are coming and everyone running out to welcome them and people with strange languages and different clothes and different smells. And they maybe set up around the fire at night and play music you've never heard before, tell stories you've never heard before. Do you see something similar today that, you know, that different people in different world live in all sorts of different ways and we don't always understand each other, but if we can come together somewhere and connect, we're just people and we can share ideas and share our ways of life and sit around the fire and tell stories still.
Our visitors come from far around the world just to see this place and know the history, because this is not a history for Muhammad who lives here or for Al-Ula who lives here. This is a humanity history. This is a history that we are sharing, and this connects the world with each other.
And when we stand in front of a beautiful place like this, this fantastic tomb carved into these rocks, there's a piece of like wonder and mystery and awe that we all felt, and the travelers have probably felt for thousands of years coming here and seeing this for the first time, and that's something that we share with each other now and through history.
Yes, I'm proud and passionate about being one of the people who transporting this idea or delivering this idea to others. Doing this mission, it's wonderful, it's beautiful, and I wake up every day thinking about what's coming next in the tour. Who will be visiting us? From where he's coming?
So you are experiencing the caravans coming. But they are the tourists, right? So they are, and they're coming to you with like in fresh eyes, they're seeing this for the first time.
We're the caravans.
You're
I
the
love
caravans.
That. We're the caravans. Let's bring the caravans back. Let's all connect and share this beautiful wonder of the world.
The story of Al-Ula, the story the earth has held, is one of connection. At this crossroads of the desert where caravans of camels carrying incense arrived into a sea of green, all were welcome. It is seen in the architecture, in the inscriptions, in the lions and the prayers. Travel has always been a catalyst for change. It's how we come together, share ideas, and grow. And though it may be new to us, Al-Ula has been welcoming visitors for thousands of years. And now, opening its doors again, we are the next layer, the caravan on the horizon, the next chapter still being carved into the element of Earth. Thanks for joining us on Elements of Al-Ula. Next time, we'll be exploring the adventures of air, flying, falling, crashing, climbing, and doing a little bit of this along the way.
Whoa! Here I am, in a 1981 Land Cruiser, with my new friend Osama behind the wheel. We've never recorded like this before.
Hold the door and hold the microphone.
Yeah.
More of that in the next episode. And don't forget to follow us, hit that subscribe button. You're not going to want to miss any of this. And if you're interested to find out more, go to experiencealula.com or at experiencealula. That's the handle for Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And a very special thank you to our travel companion and guide, Laura Alho, for her expert knowledge and insight. The Elements of Al-Ula is produced by Armchair Productions, the audio experts for the travel industry. Jason Patton did the field recording and production. I'm Aaron Miller. I wrote and presented the show. I'll see you next time.
It's an election year, so you've likely been thinking, why does it feel like American democracy is unraveling? It's the fault of our electoral system and its winner-take-all ideology. But what if it didn't have to be that way? I'm Colin Cole, one of the hosts of The Future of Our Former Democracy, where we address the question, is this centuries-old electoral system really the best we have in 2024? We look to Northern Ireland and explore how they reformed their political system to overcome deep divides and ensure more equitable representation. Each episode takes a closer look at why the U.S. could learn from Ireland's journey and what it could look like if the United States dismantled this polarizing system and replaced it with a more proportional one. Each episode examines why Northern Ireland's history can act as a blueprint for how we can overcome political divisions and achieve fairer representation. We'll take you on a sound-rich journey filled with historical insights, personal narratives, and expert interviews to challenge the idea of democracy and explore bold solutions for a more equitable future. So follow The Future of Our Former Democracy wherever you get your podcasts.
What if you could poke, prod, and explore the mysteries of nature from wherever you are? I'm Nate Hedgey, host of Outside In, an award-winning podcast from New Hampshire Public Radio. We cover all kinds of topics related to our environment, with a healthy dose of goofing off, of course. Outside In isn't just a show for thru-hikers and conservationists. It's a podcast for anyone who's ready to embrace their curiosity about the natural world and have some fun doing it. Listen every Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.